For Nerds by Nerds production.
Hello, nerdos, and welcome back to another terrifying episode of the For Nerds by Nerds Halloween Spooktacular. Today, we are covering the 1984 Wes Craven classic, A Nightmare on Elm Street. And to do so, welcome to the show, is John from the Basement Surge podcast. Hi, buddy. How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm like super excited.
Absolutely. I can't believe we have not crossed paths before because we've been in each other's stratosphere for quite a while.
We have. We have. I've followed you guys for a long time on socials, you know, so, you know, to come out, to actually come on the show, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm pumped. And you picked A Nightmare on Elm Street. Was this like a favorite of yours, or just you were like, this is a big one, everybody loves it?
It's a classic. I mean, come on, you know, and it's perfect timing with Halloween coming. So
it is true. This is definitely like it's a cornerstone of the horror genre, and this and Freddy Krueger himself is definitely a Mount Rushmore of horror.
Yes.
So I mean,
who else do you think is on that Mount Rushmore?
I've discussed this slightly before, but we can get into this. The three definites are always Freddy, Jason, and Michael.
Yeah.
And my standards for that has always been that those three, every single entry of their movies have been theatrically released.
Okay.
And it's hard to pick a fourth because most other people haven't. I guess the best one that would also fit in that category would be Ghostface, but Ghostface is not a singular person.
Chucky.
Yeah. But now, even now, Chucky's got some straight to videos under his belt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's hard.
But Chucky's straight, I would probably give it to Chucky because his straight to videos are still at least good.
Leprechaun? No, that's straight to video.
A lot of people go like Leatherface, but there's I would say probably a greater number of bad Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies than there are good.
Yeah. Maybe Candyman. Candyman was pretty good.
I do like Candyman. Yeah. It's hard. That fourth spot is just hard. I guess it's subjective. A lot of people go Pinhead, but I don't think most of the Hellraiser movies are all that great. I mean, I guess it's really what you're into.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone would ever argue Freddy, Jason, and Michael.
No, it's kind of like the unholy trinity.
That's very true. And it's weird, too, because Freddy is so extremely different than the other two. Michael and Jason are very similar. They're the silent killers. They wear masks. Right. They don't talk. Like Freddy is, he's loud and boisterous and filthy and you know who it is. Like, I recorded an episode last night on, that's already come out by the time you hear this episode, on the Slumber Party Massacre. Have you seen that?
No.
Very underrated movie. Very good. A lot of like campy slasher horror right in the, during the boom of slasher movies. And the weird thing with that, and kind of with like, with your Friday the 13th and your Halloweens, is most movies at the time in this genre, like whodunits. And all of these movies kind of stand out because they're not whodunits in a genre that is usually whodunits. These, right. You very much know who the killer is. It's not a surprise.
Yeah.
Like, there's only one burned up demon man running around in this movie. But this, especially, I guess because of the supernatural element, it doesn't need that like kind of suspense or like mystery to it. They kind of tried to do that like in the remake. They tried to add this like element of like maybe Freddy was innocent for a extremely short period of time in the movie, and right. Then they're like, psych, no, he wasn't, he was even worse than we thought he was.
yeah he was.
But in this one, he's just the worst person ever, and they're like, yeah, he kills kids.
Right,
so we killed him. And even then, like, Nancy is just like, what? That's awful. It's like, no, it isn't. he was a child murderer. What do you mean?
You know, I mean, you know, you touched on the remake, you know, and what I loved about the remake was that they added a little bit more to the origin. you know, and I would have loved to have seen that more in the original in 1984. You know what I mean? Like, because you watch those classics with Robert Englund, and you know, I wanted to know where Freddie came from. Like how did he get to where he was? You know, and they kind of touched on that with him like killing kids in the new movie, but you know, like I really wanted to know what the history was. Like, how did he get these paranormal powers to not die? Kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they kind of dive into that in later sequels, and it gets real weird. There's some nightmare demons floating around, very early CGI. It's real weird. Last year for Halloween, my dear friend and co-host on the High on Horror podcast, Miles, his show, The Disc Dump Podcast, we covered all of A Nightmare on Elm Street, the series, one by one. And at the end, we pitched, like, what could they do? Like, Blumhouse had teased that if they get the rights to the franchise, they're pretty sure they could get Robert Englund back for one more. And we pitched ideas on how they could make it and make it good. And my idea was to make a trilogy. And, like, the first one is the pre-stuff. It's Freddy as an actual human.
Right.
As a child murderer.
Right.
Getting caught, getting arrested, seeing his trial, because that is all like a big part of his story. Is like they didn't just find him and kill him because they thought he was killing kids. They found him and killed him because they knew he was killing kids, and he got off on a technicality.
Right.
Like, I would love to see that, or see, yeah, some sort of like he's into the occult and he's done something knowing he's going to die that is like sold his soul to the devil or something, like,
right,
you know, like what about being a child killer creates you becoming some sort of nightmare monster?
Yeah, well, like, how does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, it, the people on Elm Street didn't have bad enough luck that their children were being murdered. They also happened to kill a guy that became a demon man.
Right. Yeah. But, well, they burned him alive, right? That was the story.
Like, they do, yeah. And it just, yeah. There's no mythical element. There's no explanation to why. Right. It just,
and that was my
is.
Problem. Yeah. I want an explanation.
And it's one of those things. It's like, and it used to kind of work in movie making. Is if you just don't address it, most of the time an audience won't notice. If you just kind of breeze past it, it people probably aren't thinking it. But now that we've had 40 years, it's like, hey, wait a minute. why is he?
He was just always like this. This is just the way he is, and we'll just accept that, you know?
And I would just love to see a movie of him like with the glove. I think a man with a razor hand running around with no supernatural elements would be possibly even more terrifying. But what do you think it is about this movie? What do you think it is about Freddy that made him like an instant horror icon? Is it the talking? Is it the juxtaposition to the fact that like Michael and Jason don't talk? Because he's not what he becomes in the franchise. He's not like a quippy, smart-ass, every other word is bitch in this first one. Like, even his look, like his makeup, like they really, it takes a few films to really get that down to what he is known, like as his iconic status of looking like. Like, what do you think it is in this first film that really like struck a chord with audiences?
Well, I think it was really the time. You know, the era that the movie came out, you know, because a lot of people, I think, back in the 80s were watching a lot of horror movies. And back then, a lot of the special effects were kind of, you know, like they actually did them. You know, it wasn't computer graphics. Yeah. So it kind of looked real, I guess, quote unquote, you know. But, you know, I think it was the fact that Freddy, like you said, barely had any lines throughout the movie. You know, he was more of a presence than he was like a talking character. You know, like when you'd see him on screen, you'd hear the screeches of the knives on the pipes. And, you know, he literally tormented the kids. And, you know, I thought that that was what set him apart from a Jason, so to speak. You know, well, Jason didn't talk, but, you know, he attacked kids and in their dreams. And, you know, that was, I think, the biggest selling point in the dreams. You know, you had to be asleep to see him.
Well, and, yeah, it's relatable, right? Like, everybody right. has dreams. So, therefore, in this scenario, nobody is safe.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine back in 1984 going to the movie theater to see this and being afraid to go to sleep?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the, you know, people being afraid of a shark in a swimming pool after watching Jaws.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's ridiculous. You exactly. know it can't happen, but it plants that seed in your mind.
Right. So you think, all right, tonight I'm going to go home, I'm going to go to bed, and I'm going to see Freddy. But, you know, and then a lot of people, after they watched, Friday the 13th, they were afraid to go camping. So
it is. Those movies have that type of effect on you. I watch Halloween, and if I have to, like, go outside in the dark, it's scary. You hear the music in your head. You just have that sense of unease, and it's something that made this era like the golden age of just like horror hits. And it's odd too, because a lot of times, like nowadays, like with like Marvel movies and like the internet and stuff like that, you hear a lot about like oversaturation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy that like so many iconic things came out of like the early 80s.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like the market wasn't oversaturated. If you go back and look, there were so many
right.
cheesy, low-budget slasher movies, because once one hit, all these film companies did was just be like, get another one out, get, you know, we got to tap this market.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy that not only did you get standouts, you got standouts that, you know, like solidified the genre and became cult status and then became like classic characters. Like, this was like the first real legitimate like group of new horror icons since like the black and white Universal classics, like
right.
your Dracula, Frankenstein, stuff like that. Like this, and it's like the skipped generation in the middle. Not that there wasn't horror movies in like the 50s and 60s,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, not to this height, not to this, you know.
Right.
It's 40 years later, and we still talk about this.
Right. I mean, Freddy was gruesome. It was impactful. You know, like I remember one of the scenes, he cut his own fingers off with his knives, with his glove, you know, and I'm like, well, you would not see that in today's movies. You know, like Tina, the girl he's chasing in the movie, rips his face off.
Yeah.
Like the skin of his face comes peeling off and he's laughing right at her. And it's just like, I don't think you'd see that.
No, and I have talked about this many times and I will continue to talk about it for the rest of my life because we'll never see it again. You can't make movies look like this anymore.
No.
I think one of the biggest selling points to me and why my favorite kind of era and genre of horror movies is early 80s slashers is the way it looks.
Yeah.
Once it moved from film to digital,
yeah,
it lost everything. The lowest budget movie now looks more produced because film, like cameras are just so good now. You can't make it look this way.
Yeah.
And that's lost something. It doesn't look kind of real. It doesn't look like a movie you found in a shack somewhere. Like it looks
you have to produced. Buy one of those old cameras. You know, you have to buy an old camera, use the film that they used back then, the same type of audio recording equipment that they used. You know, you have to go back and actually use that equipment to get that kind of feel, I think. And I think today's generation is kind of desensitized. you know, in a way, because, you know, if they seen that now, they wouldn't get such a shock because they see, you know, things like that all the time now. So,
yeah, I do wonder, though, with movies like this with like high practical effects, I wonder if that would still be extremely shocking to a new generation, because practical effects is a very lost art.
Yeah.
And in this was such an amazing time for such a thing. And it helps so much. I mean, I hate if they did these exact same things in a reboot, but they were CGI,
mm-hmm.
everybody would roll their eyes.
Right.
He cut his fingers off and you could tell they were CGI, or, you know, slashed his own stomach over and pulled his face off. Like, being practical makes it more impactful. It makes it more like,
I agree,
gut-wrenching or like spine tingling. Like, it's very lost. The uncanny valley of these things when it comes to doing it CGI is just ineffective and not scary. It's supposed to be scary. Watching a man pull his own face off is terrifying.
And you know what? How many kids back in the 80s wanted to be Freddy for Halloween? You know?
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing about these movies. He became a cultural icon. He had action figures. I mean, this motherfucker was one step away from having a breakfast cereal.
Yeah. Like, he probably did. You know what?
He probably did.
And I remember, I think the first time I seen this movie was, I think, like 1988 or 1989. I must have been 5 or 6. And, you know, I loved him. Like, I was but I was deathly afraid of him. Right. Like, as a little kid, I didn't want to go to sleep. I was so afraid of the movie. But for Halloween, I got the costume and I got the glove. The costume came with the glove with plastic knives.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the fingertips. And I had that thing for the longest time. I loved it. Loved it.
I mean, and just think of that culturally.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see that today.
No.
And be like, "Mommy, I want to be a child murderer for Halloween." And their parents would be like, "Hell yeah, let's do that."
That's terrible, yeah.
It's just, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the people driving those things or
it was the market.
Yeah, or it was the movie studio. Like, were they capitalizing on the popularity with the marketing, or was the marketing helping with the popularity? Yeah. You know what I mean? Was it, let's push toys, let's push? But I mean, it was also maybe just the time, because they did that kind of with everything. I had RoboCop action figures when I was a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
That's not for little kids. RoboCop was my favorite movie when I was 8. I shouldn't have been watching that. Yeah. Dude gets his arms blown off.
What about Alien?
That's true. Yeah, there's always been Alien toys. That's true.
Yeah.
Back in the day, they would just market everything towards children, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I ate it up. I loved it.
It was, yeah. I mean, it is a...
The one thing I did not have when I was a kid was a Jason mask. I always wanted the hockey mask.
I have it now. Yeah. I didn't have it when I was a kid. I do remember when I was a little kid, I was Scooby-Doo and my dad was Jason for Halloween.
Nice.
They didn't really go together, but somehow they did.
Yeah. Scooby's on a murder mystery quest, you know.
let's talk about the actors a little bit in this movie, because we do have Robert Englund, and this is his most iconic role. Mm-hmm. And he does just kind of... He knocks it out of the park in every single one. Like,
right.
The movies do kind of like waver in quality throughout the series, but he is a constant, and it isn't a character you want to see replaced.
Right.
And clearly, I mean, with that being the biggest problem for most people with the reboot, it's odd how big this character is, how much of a household name it was, and how much name recognition he has for being this character.
Yeah.
Yet his career didn't really go anywhere else. I mean, he has worked, but he's, you know.
I can't tell you another movie he was in.
It never really is like a starring role. He's, yeah. I mean, I think he's, I know a couple, but it's mostly off of like his name recognition, not his acting prowess. Like he's a college professor and urban legend, but that is only because he's Freddy Krueger. It's because this is a horror movie and he's a horror icon. That's why he is in it. Like, but I mean, he's good. He's a good actor in this. And I don't know what else I could see him doing, because I mean, maybe that is it. Maybe he was typecast. Maybe he was so good at this role he couldn't transcend.
Or, you know, it's just good business sense, because he's seen where the franchise was going, and he didn't really have to rely too much on getting other work.
That is true. And he has been kind of blessed that, like, after the popularity of these movies died down, the rise of, like, con culture has really sustained people like him and a lot of other people in the horror community, like, their career. I mean, that's probably the majority of their income.
Right.
Just traveling and doing the con circuit, meeting fans. And, I mean, hell, that has to make you feel good that you portrayed a character in 40 years. People still love it and will line up to see you for it. Like,
yeah,
you did something right.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I'm looking at his IMDb right now, and it seems like he's actually been in at least one or two movies every year since Freddy.
Yeah, he's always doing something.
He's done a lot of work.
Yeah, he's in a lot of shit we've never heard of, though.
Yeah, yeah, he is. Super Robot Monkey Team Hyperforce Go. What the hell is that?
He was in a cool movie. Have you ever seen Behind the Mask?
That sounds familiar.
It was like a straight-to-video horror movie in like the mid-2000s. It was really cool. It's like a documentary. It's filmed like a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this crew is going to meet a guy that says he's a masked serial killer, like a Jason Voorhees. Okay. And it's really cool. They show him, like, working out, and he's like, yeah, I mean, you wouldn't believe how much cardio you need to have to do this. Like, you got to act like you're walking, and then when no one's looking, you really got to haul ass. But Robert Englund's in that, and he plays, like, that guy's, like, Dr. Loomis. Okay. He's, like, always trying to thwart his, like, murderous ways. Yeah, I highly recommend that movie. But I mean, who else is in this? I mean, the biggest actor,
Johnny Depp,
is Johnny Depp. I mean, yes. Heather Langenkamp's a star, but I mean, she didn't go on to do much.
No, this was Johnny Depp's actual first movie.
Yeah, this birthed the world to the star that is Johnny Depp, and he is good in this. He's not really in it a ton.
No, but the scenes that he is in, like, he's actually pretty decent of an actor for his first movie, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of people in this. There's only really, like, seven characters.
Yeah.
And he's good, and his death is so iconic. I mean, what a scene. And I think that is something that stands out to this movie, and I think it is is something that happens a lot that really makes great movies, especially in, like, this time, is, like, desperation really helps create amazing content, because you'll do what you have to do. Like, what, you know, they didn't have the highest budget in the world on this, so they made things work. Like, when Freddy's arms stretch out, I mean, they have guys off camera with fishing rods, like, reeling his arms out, and, like, they turned the room upside down and poured blood out and filmed it upside down and made it look like blood's pouring. Like,
love those practical effects.
The innovation that comes with desperation, because the New Lines was barely a film studio at the time.
Right.
And they put all their chips on this and was like, either this works out or we go bankrupt.
Yeah.
And
they actually called New Line the house that Freddy built.
Yeah, because, I mean, and you can see why they made seven movies in a row. Like, ride it till the wheels fall off. Let's keep it going. Yeah, milk this cow for everything it's worth.
Like, right.
Johnny Depp's death. For any of you, if you're listening to this and for some reason you've never seen A Nightmare on Elm Street, shame on you. A. Yeah,
sorry.
B. I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you haven't watched it. But if you haven't watched it, you've probably seen this death, because it's one of the most iconic deaths in horror movie history.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp, his character, is supposed to be staying awake for our main character, and he nods off. And when he does, Freddy sucks him down into his bed.
Yeah.
And a geyser of blood erupts out of it. And it goes on for a bit. And it's just like, his parents walk in after this. Imagine that. Like, yeah. Imagine the horror.
The blood is like leaking through the floor down to the living room.
I mean, you'd have to burn the house down. Like, yeah, you can't clean that up.
I would move. Yeah, I would have to move.
It's just so well done. And I don't know. Is there anything not to like about it? Is there anything you want when you watch this? Because you watched this for this. Was there anything while you're watching it where you're like, this doesn't hold up anymore? This is cheesy. Besides the acting, maybe.
I mean, the acting really wasn't so bad. I mean, you kind of expect that for an 80s horror movie. You know, like, it's not that bad.
It's not the worst, especially for an 80s movie. I've seen much worse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. But, you know, it's like, I watched the movie last night. And I can honestly tell you, like, I wouldn't change anything about it. Nothing about it stood out to me, said, oh, that's just too much. No, that's just too cheesy. You know, they could have did without that. No. I really honestly think from beginning to end, like, this movie's just, it's a classic, you know, and it's a classic for a reason.
I never don't enjoy it. I watch this movie every few years and it never gets old. It never feels like dated. It is 80s, but it's not one of those movies that's so heavily 80s that it stands out like a sore thumb.
You know what bothered me about it was that I was reading the IMDb about the movie and the hints and the behind the scenes information that they give for the movie. I was reading that, and it said that the movie is supposed to be based in the 1950s, but everybody looks like they're in the 80s because they dress, you know, the way they dress and the way the hair is and all that. But it says that the movie's supposed to be placed in the 50s. And I was like, well, that doesn't really make any sense. But I mean, you can kind of tell that a little bit because, you know, it's kind of suburban, you know, in the suburban area, everybody's kind of like, you know, mom and pop kind of thing. But I didn't get that vibe.
Yeah, I could definitely see an influence of the time, but I would never assume it's set there. Yeah. I mean, Johnny Depp has a portable television.
Well, yeah, but then you had that, what's her name? Was that Tina's boyfriend?
Yeah, he's dressed like a greaser.
It looked like he was from Greece. So
yeah, that seems to be an 80s trope, though. I mean, almost every Jason movie has greasers in it, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, what year is this supposed to be?
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of the cars definitely look like they would be of that time.
Yeah.
And
especially that convertible at the end that is on them, you know, that it looks like it's a classic car.
There's a lot of, like, especially later on the franchise, a lot of like this kind of decor and some of the ways people dress. I could see maybe there was some sort of influence there.
Yeah.
I would say the only thing I would change, and this is just from like a continuity, someone missed this standpoint. Is Freddy Krueger is supposed to be all burned. His hands are burned. His face is burned.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he lifts up his sweater and cuts his stomach.
Yeah, with the maggots.
His torso is not burned.
Really? I didn't notice that.
The sweater protected his torso. Only his hands and his face were burned.
Oh, blooper.
Yep. And he's so pale white that it stands out like a sore thumb. That's the only thing I'd change. Because it's just, amazing music, sound. Yeah. The sound design in this movie is amazing. I think a horror movie needs that. I mean, I've seen a lot of movies because we do a lot of commentaries, and sometimes we've done first run movies. Mm-hmm. Like, we've sight unseen, we've done a commentary for it. And sometimes, depending on our setup, we can't hear the movie, so we can only read the subtitles. And I've gone back and watched the movie later. And been like, wow, the music really changes the experience here.
Yeah.
Because it helps set the tone.
Sure.
It is scene to scene. Maybe sometimes it's character to character.
Yeah.
The villain will have their own sound or tones or music, kind of like, oh no, they're here type of thing.
Right.
So it's it can make or break a movie. And I've seen movies where I'm like, if the music was different, this would be better.
Yeah.
Like whoever did the sound design was not, they didn't kill it on this one. And I think that is part of, like, all of those things are part of what makes this movie a classic. It's the cinematography is great. The effects are great. Mm-hmm. The actors are exactly what you want for something like this. You know what I mean? They don't have to be great.
Yeah.
But they're not bad either. They're
right.
They're made for this. Like John Saxton is meant for this type of role.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know what, if you ask me, I think one of my favorite parts about this movie is, and this goes back to earlier about what we spoke about, what makes this movie so great, is that the little girl's jumping rope. One, two, Freddy's coming for you. The nursery rhyme, you know, and that alone. See, for me, little girls alone freak the hell out of me, right? A little girl ghosts, little girl possessions, like shit like that, that freaks the hell out of me. So it's kind of, I think it's rooted from Freddy. Because when I remember when I heard that nursery rhyme the first time, it freaked me the hell out. Okay.
It is. Yeah. It's, and that's definitely intentional because it sticks with you. It's catchy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like they're happy that they support Freddy. Meanwhile, he's the one that kills the kids, but the kids support him. So it's kind of like, you know.
Yeah. It's weird.
Way, you know?
Is he creating them or are they just in this nightmare world?
Right.
And there's always, especially in the earlier films, there's a lot of like imagery that's just off-putting.
Yeah.
There's a goat for no reason.
Yeah.
And it's just a goat being a goat, but for some reason, the way it's filmed, it's creepy.
Yeah. It's all about the imagery and how it's used, and it's just traumatizing.
Let's talk about Wes Craven, because I like to lump him and John Carpenter kind of together as having very similar parallel careers.
Okay.
Is where they had a couple of big hits, and then they did a lot of like swinging for the fences, and then they kind of came back later.
Right.
Like John Carpenter did Halloween, and he did The Thing, and then these are huge movies that people love, and then he did Big Trouble in Little, what is it? Big Trouble in Little China, stuff like that. Like right, he has these movies that people love, but then he did a lot of movies that people are like, "What the fuck is this?" Like,
right.
In the Mouth of Madness and Prince of Darkness and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes Craven did the same. Like these big name directors, their characters are more iconic than they are.
Right.
But because their characters are so iconic, they get held to this, like, the masters of horror. Like, they literally, there was a show called Masters of Horror, and they got like, they're the biggest directors to get. And it was awful. But, I mean, Wes Craven did movies before this. Like, he did Last House on the Left, and he did The Hills Have Eyes.
That was pretty decent.
And I mean, for what he had, I mean, these are very low budget films, and it was almost Grindhouse esque of kind of indie filmmaking at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets this and he knocks this out of the park, and then he's out immediately. Second one, they want to do another one. He's like, nope.
Yeah.
They get him back to write 3. He's out again.
He probably wasn't feeling it, you know?
And then he does, like, Shocker, a movie about a inmate on death row that becomes some sort of electricity television.
Oh, boy.
Man, have you seen this one?
No.
He can jump, like, television set to television set.
Wow.
And this was his, like, I'm going to make a new horror icon. And I'm going to make a new franchise, because he didn't get rights to Nightmare on Elm Street. So he lost all of that merchandise money that was made
really?
From the toys and the posters and the lunchboxes and all that stuff. So he's like, I'm gonna make a new franchise, and this movie was god awful.
Wow.
And then he gets it back a little bit with New Nightmare, and then he gets Scream, which, yeah. I mean, he didn't write Scream, but he directed Scream, and that carried him for the rest of his career.
Can I say that I'm not a big fan of Scream? Is that allowed?
It's allowed. I mean, like what you like. Different strokes for different folks. I find it shocking that that movie is held in such regard as a horror movie.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, besides the serious points of like the ending and stuff, it's a horror comedy. They're poking so much fun at the horror genre.
Yeah.
And they do it in every single one that it's hard to be like, this is strictly a horror movie. Right. Like it's too...
It's a parody.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. It's a it's a parody film that is set inside of an actual horror movie.
Right.
But his... He is a good director.
Right, yeah.
So how... I wonder what happened there. And I wonder, like, the same with John Carpenter. Like, is it a refusal to own, like, to step away from your own IP? Like, I have to write it. I have to produce it. I have to direct, like...
Yeah.
Instead of being like, maybe I'll take somebody else's and I'd adapt it. Because, I mean, that's what happened for Wes Craven. It was kind of miss after miss after miss, and then somebody else writes it for him, and then he knocks it out of the park again. Like,
right?
I wonder, because I mean, he was hands on with this first one. I wonder if directors like that, they kind of like their ego gets inflated when they do get a massive hit that they're like, oh, I can't miss. I wrote it. It's everything that I wrote was what made this successful.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it could be, but you know, at the same time, I would like to think that they consider themselves as artists, you know. So if they, like, Wes Craven wanted to ride the Freddy train, you know, for as long as he possibly could, because he knew that Freddy wasn't going to go anywhere, you know, and people were still gonna love it generations from when he made it, and you know, I think that's just good business. You know, just sticking with what you know works, and just making it continue, keeping the dream alive, so to speak,
or the nightmare,
or the nightmare. Yeah, keeping the nightmare alive. That's a good title for this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, where do you think that they could properly resurrect this franchise, and what do you think would need to be done for that to happen?
I liked the actor that they got last time for the reboot.
Jackie Earl Haley.
Yeah, I liked him. My only problem with him was that he was too short.
He is very short, man.
Small of a guy, right? Because Freddie, I would imagine, is a little taller and thinner than what he was, you know? But I think they need to find the right Freddie if they can't get Robert Englund. But
a lot of people have been saying Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
He's getting a little old.
Yeah, he's getting a little up there. But I don't know. Like, you got to find the right actor, I think, and the right story. Because if, like you said, I think a trilogy would work with this, you know. And the first movie could be an origin. And then the second and third movies, they could just take it off from there. But also, in a way, I don't think today's society would accept it. I really don't. A child killer, you know, and the parents go and seek revenge on him. I don't know if that would be acceptable. And it's disheartening because it's a great freaking story.
Yeah, I do worry it would be turned into some sort of social commentary that is not needed in this sort of film.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah.
Have you ever seen, there was a, I don't know how short lived, but I mean short enough lived. There was a Nightmare on Elm Street TV series. Did you ever see that? Like early 90s.
Was it a cartoon?
No, it was real. It was live action. But most of it didn't have anything to do with Freddy. A lot of it was just like, I'm having a horrible nightmare.
Oh, God.
But there were a couple of Freddy Krueger episodes.
Mm.
And one of them is the trial of Freddy Krueger.
Oh.
So you do get some backstory there. But they still didn't, like, feel the need to be like, hey.
Yeah.
This is how he became a demon, man.
Yeah. See, like, this is my problem. Like, they give you hints, bits and clips of his origin in different mediums. Like, that's on TV, right? Like, and then a little bit in the movies and a little bit in, I think, novels or comic books, you know? And, like, just put it all down in one place, you know, like, explain it. They should do the same thing for Jason.
Yeah. I think that if they did some sort of really dark, like True Detective 7 style, like,
yes,
the like hunting, like the police investigation and then capture and mm-hmm. trial of Freddy Krueger and finding all this weird shit at his house of, you know, demonic books and rituals. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff on top of him being like a child killer. And so I think it could be different, so new, and very intriguing to capture the audience of like, this is a side of this story that you have no idea about. It mm-hmm. explains a lot. It makes sense. And it can be actually scary again, because doing a bunch of CGI like nightmare stuff isn't really going to be all that scary anymore.
Yeah.
Because we've had 7 movies, like,
yeah.
give us some more grounded, realistic shit of this man abducting and torturing children. Like, that, this would be terrifying. Like,
yeah.
I think that would be a good way, especially, you know, it's been so long. You have to now, you can't make enough money to be successful banking on the audience you had. You have to capture a new audience.
Right.
So you have to make it somewhat.
Well, I think at the same time, I mean, Freddy is a classic, you know? So I think if you make a new movie, all the old fans are going to come out of the woodwork.
Yes, it is true.
Yeah.
But I mean, 40 years on now, you're losing some of them. You know,
yeah. I get that. But so, it's up to the surviving ones to turn out children into fans.
It is true. Yeah, it is true. I mean, I'm a diehard Halloween and Friday the 13th fan, and I always root for these franchises to come back, and I'd love to see this franchise come back. Like,
can I ask your honest opinion on Halloween Ends?
Oh, it's an awful piece of shit. I hate it. I think it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen, and I was mad in the movie theater.
Thank you. Thank you.
I will send you a link to an episode I did.
Yep, I'm sure you did one.
Ooh, we skip segments because I had so much to say. Yeah, no. God, it was awful. Really like Kills. Like Halloween Kills. That is a bloodbath, but yeah. Ends is no bueno. But yeah, I mean, anything else you want to talk about this film? Anything that stands out to you?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, this franchise is a classic. You know, I wrote down some notes. We basically spoke about everything that I wrote down. And it's a classic that I think everybody, even new generations, has to see.
Are you a big fan of any other ones in the franchise?
What?
The Nightmare on Elm Street franchise? Are you a big fan of 3? Lots of people love Dream Warriors.
Honestly, I couldn't tell you the storyline of any of the other ones.
They're all...
Except because they kind of all mesh together for me. But except Freddy vs. Jason. Freddy vs. Jason,
I
think, one of my other favorites.
I love it.
Yeah.
It is very 2000s, and there's a lot of it that doesn't hold up, but
yeah,
those two do, and that's right. What you're there for. So that's all that really matters.
I think Freddy vs. Jason was really the last one that got the nostalgic feel of the 80s horror movie for me, you know?
Yeah, it really does work. It really feels right, and both of them feel like they're still in their time period.
Yeah.
Even though the kids seem new and modern for the time.
Yeah.
They didn't change those characters.
What I don't understand about either Freddy or Jason movies is that how come every especially the Jason movies. How come every movie he's got to kill somebody, people that are having sex?
It's true. He is a bit of a buzzkill.
Yeah.
I chalk it up to this. What a way to go. Who doesn't want to go out like that? If I'm going to die,
there you go.
Better be at the highest peak.
Leave it up to Jason and Freddy to cock block it.
Yeah. He's doing the world a favor.
Sorry.
But hell yeah, buddy. This is awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and doing this.
Anytime. This is great.
Well, hell yeah. Plug the show. Tell everybody what it's all about and where they can find you and all that good stuff.
The Basement Surge is the number one podcast/YouTube channel from a basement in Brooklyn, New York. Okay, you can find us at basementstudiosny.com and YouTube and all of the podcast listening platforms. We're over there too. So we're basically all over the place. The show is going to go through an evolution pretty soon, and I'm really excited. So I can't wait for that. I can't wait for you guys to see it. And so stay tuned.
Hell yeah, definitely check that out. And John's going to come back on sometime soon. We're going to do a commentary for the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Dude, you have no idea. I know line for line that movie.
I love that movie. It's so good.
And yeah, like I am so down.
So good. I can't wait. I love that movie. But hell yeah, you can find this show on Twitter, FMBM Podcast. We are on Facebook and Instagram, FMBM, the number 4 and letter U. And we will be back next time with another spooky episode. But until then, I am Josh.
I'm John.
And this is the Four Nerds by Nerds podcast signing off.
Stay nerdy, my friends.